And one of the interesting things about him is that he's collecting material that Rav Miller said at the classes that he gave on Thursday night. But the interesting part of it is he puts it very often in time, in terms of timely matter. So the topic he talked about, which was I just saw today, is tomorrow, which is July 4th. And I'm taking a piece of it here. He talks about the difference between a Jewish way to deal with a holiday and a non-Jewish way to deal with a holiday. He said, certainly people who are worthless have to be kept busy. That's why the non-Jews are not supposed to keep Shabbos. Only Jews have a right to keep Shabbos. If a goy, a non-Jew, keeps Shabbos, a goy who keeps a day of rest, even if it would be Tuesday or any day of the week, it's Chayav Misa, he should be killed for it. Because it's not for the non-Jews. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want the non-Jews to be at leisure. What do? When they are at leisure, they make trouble for each other and for themselves. Did you ever walk past a car mechanic when all the people there, I'm going to skip any details, but when all of the men are working, none of them have a word to say to you. But when you pass the same people in the evening sitting on their front stoop, suddenly they have all the time in the world to bother you. Leisure time is not good for everyone. Do you know how many non-Jews will remain alive if it wasn't for July 4th? This coming July 4th, at least 700 people will be killed on the roads. At least 700, besides those who will stab each other at barbecues and in the taverns. I already told you this joke many times, but, well, I'm going to skip the joke. Maybe it's not so appropriate for the air. Suppose they would abolish July 4th. But you can get it from Torah Savigdah. Suppose they would abolish July 4th. It would be a hatzalah for the non-Jewish world. Lives would be saved. Now, I'm not for that. July 4th is a good thing. By the way, you should all hang out American flags. By the way, Rav Miller always did, and the shul, until today, they always have a flag out on July 4th, and I think on other secular holidays. He says, you should all hang out American flags. I say you should buy flags and hang them out for the 4th of July. Listen to me. No matter how frum you are, buy a flag and hang it out. But the 4th of July is a misfortune for those people who are not capable of using their leisure time properly. And who is not capable? All of them. And therefore, the Am Yisrael, they know how to make use of their leisure time. But the non-Jewish world, it's a different story. Interestingly enough, you know, everybody, that tomorrow, if you have time, you go to, there's a whole half a day from 8 o'clock in the morning until about 1 o'clock. I in the Hakel running a program, I believe, I didn't even look at the paper because I have a chavrus at that time, but if you look at the piece, I believe it's from Hakel, and I believe it's in the Agud of Avenue L, whole morning of learning. That's a day off for a Jewish person. The difference. So he quoted Norman Vincent Peale, believe it or not. Do you know what Xmas is? Let me tell you. Did you ever hear of Norman Vincent Peale? He's a famous galach, a famous Gentile pastor. Norman Vincent Peale made the following statement. He said, Xmas is the season of the most drunkenness, most crime, and most tragedies. You can look it up. That's a fact. He said those words. Those are his words. That's what Norman Vincent Peale said. Hodas bal din kemeya edim dami. If somebody tells about himself, he's the best witness. Now, lahavdil, think about Hanukkah. After Hanukkah, you clean up, and everyone is all the better because of the glorious holiday. And Pesach. Nobody stared at each other at Pesach Seder. When I was in Lithuania, someone showed me the Lietuvos Idis, a Lithuanian newspaper. Every Monday morning, there was a list of stabbings that took place on their day of rest, Sunday. Not one stabbing took place by us on Shabbos. What that means is that people who know how to keep Shabbos, who know how to make use of their spare time, Those are the people who are supposed to have a Shabbos. That's why we have a Shabbos. But those who don't know how to use their spare time, they're not supposed to have any leisure time. You want to get this, you can subscribe to Torah Avigdor, TorasAvigdor. Rav Miller was very pithy, very to the point, and very outspoken, and always open your mind. And if you want to hear some of these beautiful tidbits, just go to Torah Avigdor. By the way, over the times I've mentioned it, many people have signed up with Torah Avigdor, and I get feedback. People tell me how much they love it. So I feel good. That was something I accomplished. Let me go on to what's going on in the schools. And I'm planning, hopefully, to do an interview. I don't know if it'll be on the radio or in the magazine or both, with somebody who was involved in the Aguda, because this is what the reality is. The representatives of these Orthodox groups, Aguda and some others, have been petitioning the government in meetings and through correspondence since last October to exempt the schools from the legal requirement to serve leafy, dark green vegetables as part of a menu eligible for federal funding. Their reason has nothing to do with the taste of spinach, kale, or cabbage. It's because these and other leafy greens might be infested with tiny insects which would render them non-kosher. So these groups asked the United States Department of Agriculture to find substitutes that would maintain the nutritional benefits of those vegetables without forcing these Orthodox children to eating food that may be against halacha. So this is what is being taken up. And because of there's a law called the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010. And that's the problem that, they're trying to force certain vegetables. And the Aguda people were working on that. And how it's going down now at this point, I don't really know. I'm looking into it, and hopefully I'll have something in the future report. Now we come to our third topic. This is great. It's all in Hebrew, so you're going to have to bear with me. I'm going to read a little bit of the Hebrew and translate it the best of my ability. And if you think that I made a mistake, you can call in. The number here is 718-683-5858. To listen to us, it's 718-506-9099. But to call us, it's 718-683-5858, 718-683-5858. To call in to speak to us. Now, I want to tell you this: what this piece is. I get the most questions about insects. People call me up. They think this is a bug center or whatever. You know, this is the Lakosha laboratory. I get so many people calling with questions about insects. What I do know, what I don't know, I direct them in the right way. Now, I spoke recently for a group of ladies on a Shabbos afternoon, and you'd think in a group of ladies here in Flatbush, be very divergent questions. Almost every question was about insects. How do you do this? What about that? I said, very interesting. And one of the biggest complaints or issues, you know, I feel like Moshe Rabbeinu, one of the biggest issues is, you know, you people, or the rabbis, or Rabbi Vaya came up with all these chumras, never existed. Judaism wasn't like that. I didn't grow up that way, etc., etc. Well, you might not have grown up that way because people didn't know. Or you might have not grown up that way because it wasn't available to you, the information that was coming through and for those people who were investigating. You may not have been close to the information, and with today's world, the information gets to you quickly. So that's, I think, one of the biggest differences. But let me take you back. I have a topic here. It's a wonderful, there's an organization called Kosharot. I'm saying it in the Hebrew pronunciation, Kosharot, and they are in Israel. It's a mamlachti dati, what they call dati l'umi organization, which means nationalistic and an Orthodox, but not Haredi, which we'd call more middle of the road, or maybe you'd call it centrist in America. I'm not sure that's the proper word for them. I've never met them, but that's the way I imagine it to be. And I had a wonderful article about the work that they did a few years ago, actually a bunch of years ago. They went in to all the to many restaurants from all the different hashgachas. It didn't matter how right wing, or whether it's Rabbanut, or it's all the way up to the Eda Charedis, or Rabbi Landau, or Rabbi the Shevis from Shevis Israel, or Rabbi Reuben from Mechova. It doesn't make a difference who they were. They looked into everything. And from the Bells and from Agudas Yisrael, they looked into everybody's restaurants. And they did a report in restaurants. And they mentioned by name which restaurants were good, according to their standards, and which restaurants needed some improvement, and they gave the reasons why. It was a real humdinger. That was some challenging thing, and I had to go and handle it my way because I try to handle things delicately, and I printed many of the findings without some of the excitement, and it was wonderful. And this Rabbi Katz, who runs it, Moshe Katz, wonderful man. Over the years, I've had some things with them, but this is beautiful things with them. But this is an article. It's written by Rav Yitzchak Devir, and it's called Haim Pikuach Mis. Mecharkim hu milahajin bilvad. Is the watching for vegetables, checking vegetables, concern for insects, is that for mahadrin? Is that for the charedim? Is that for the fruma? Or is that for everybody? Interesting question, no? So he says, many people are raising questions. It never happened before. It's all new stuff. Listen to what he said. He said, "Ha'im yitachen shavoseinu nagu shelo kedin va'achlu charakim? You want to tell me that my father was a nice religious man? He didn't keep kosher enough for you? You know, he didn't do any of that stuff. My mother never did that. And you're telling me that you have to? What was with them? They were fine Jews." That's the common feeling that so many people have. And he broke it down to a few areas. I'm going to give it to you more or less as he said it, but I'm not going to be able to read the whole thing in Hebrew. Ha'im haya yadua al negios ba'avar? Did people know about these insect infestation in the past? So he gives you some very exciting examples. First, he mentions the Pri Chadash. Pri Chadash is very well known to anybody who learned Yoredeya. He's a major player on the level right after the Shulchan Aruch. The Pri Chodesh is up there with the Shach and all the exciting svarim that we refer to. The Pri Chodesh says, "Sha'agabe hachasa v'yakruv mitzuyam charakim ketanim v'rabim," that on lettuce and cabbage are found very tiny insects, and many of them. So he noted that. V'hu koveya, and he fixed and made established, shebechelek me'onos hashano, that in certain times of the year, ein klal efsharus le'ochlam, there's no way during certain times of the year that you're allowed to eat them. Not they're going to check. Not you're going to wash. Not you're going to get some special man hired. No, you can't do it. It's beyond normal. You can't touch it. And that's what he said. And it wasn't only in those two. There were other things as well. Now we come. We're in the Sephardic area. Partly Sephardic anyway. I'm in a Sephardic. The station is run in the Sephardic world here. The Mashal The Ben Ish Chai said, "Me olam lo achal nana." I'm not sure what nana is. Somebody will tell me. But whatever it is, that vegetable he did not eat at all. And he goes, the Shlo HaKadosh gave a testimony, "Shepa'amim rabos," many times, who pasal l'shivuk, he didn't allow to be sold be'iro in his town, as kol ha'orez, no rice, beglal hanagios shehoyas abo, because of the insect infestation. He asked rice many times in his town, shloh. Kakam nimtza biyachas l'zeisim, tamorim, gudganios, pitrios, petal, ali gefen, v'selek. Okay? In the same, also, these different vegetables and fruits, olives and dates and cherries and berries and ali gefen, which is the leaves are from the grape leaves, the selek, and all those he had asered, the shloh asered at different times. The Ben Ish Chai writes, Shepam achas b'shana, hu ma'ale aleis salak al shulchano. One time a year, the Ben Ish Chai took these leaves from, what's salak? Selek?
Selek. Selek is, what do you call it? Beets.
Okay, so, okay. So he took beet leaves once a year on his table on Rosh Hashanah in order for the simonim. V'gam oz haselek hu b'chinas lerosa milvad. He only put it to look at. He didn't eat it. That's the Ben Ish Chai. And afilu, and v'gabi tusim, the tusim are these berries, maybe it's the strawberries, made
strawberries. Yeah.
Amarcha shebe aram tsova, they made a gezeira and they asked eating it because of the difficulty to make a bedika. So they asked in aram tsova. This is for the Sfarim, my friends here. V'chena anu motzim gam pekilos nosafos, other communities as well. So we have really big people, the Ben Ish Chai, the Pri Chodosh, the Shloh. We quoted so far real big people who had serious concerns and didn't use either ever or for certain times of the year or sometimes completely for the whole city. It was really serious, and that was what we had from those days. Now, another question. What about the size of these insects? Is it, were they so careful to worry about little teeny weeny things that are so small it's almost hard to see? So the Chochmas Adam says that you're not supposed to use to rely on some special glass to be able to, you know, to a magnifying glass to be able to figure out if you can see it or not. The problem was vinegar. It seems the vinegar had a lot of toiloyim and a lot of insects in it. So he said you can't answer it because you can see it with a magnifying glass. But he says lo nidnu Torah l'malach hasharis. The Torah wasn't given to Malachim. How were they supposed to know this thing? I mean, they may be bugs in there, but you can't see them properly. Forget about it. However, the Chochmas Adam, in fact, he asserted the use of that vinegar because you could look at it in the light of the sun on a certain angle, and you'd be able to see these insects, and you wouldn't need a magnifying glass to see them, but you'd have to look in the sun and get the right angle, and you'd be able to see them. And they were very, very, very tiny. They were so small that they weren't able to be, they couldn't put them through a sieve. They didn't have a sieve that was tight enough that they would hold back these insects. So that's how small they were. And still in all, they did see them, but only in especially looking in the light a certain way. And on the basis of that, they forbid the use of that vinegar when they saw those bugs in there. The Shloh HaKadosh, he said, Shirak Kishahigil of Prague, only when he reached Prague did it become known that the rice has a problem. The Shloh said until he reached Prague, he didn't know about this thing at all. Mitzius Shaloyasam Mukeres Viyadua Be'iro HaKodemis. In this previous city, Nobody could see these things. Nobody mentioned them. And he was eating them. And everybody was eating them in the other cities. And only when he got to Prague did he find out. And then he asked it. Because Shirak Chadei Ri'iya Matzlichim L'Zayhos Oson. The only people who are trained and who are adept at finding them can actually find them. But at that point, he answered because he said that it is now known that these things have charakim, they have insects. In Aram Tzova, for example, they set up that that after many years, when they used to eat the grape leaves, they found small bugs on them. And the poiskim me'idim shehizboninus ubi'iyun ragil kasheldim tzosacharakim ala lima elu. That it, with regular inspection, it's hard to find those insects. Only habakim bekachit slichul zohisam. That only those people who are, I didn't say professionals, whatever it is, but they are trained, they are adept, called boki. They know how to look for them. They were able to see them, those grape leaves. And the bottom line is that the Beis Din of Aram Tzova paskin that you can't eat them from that time on. So here we have a perfect example of where people were using these things before and stopped. The insects were very small, and the professionals pointed it out to them. And that's the Rabbanim went with that. That's the way it was in the Shlosh time. That's the way it was with Chachmas Adam, and etc., etc. Now the Chesam Sofer. Be'ikvois of Machriya Gam HaMishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura goes along with the Chesam Sofer. Shalom Ros Shebein Minei HaMaror HaShonim HaChasahu HaMin HaMuvchah B'Yoseir. The best of the set, there are five species that are mentioned for Maror in the Gemara. And it would be nice if we knew that we had the original ones and that we were fulfilling the mitzvah of Maror. Of course, today it's a drabbanan, but still in all, it's a mitzvah and we're making a brach on it. It'd be nice to do it, right? So the question is, which is the best one of the five? The answer is not so simple because things have changed. It's many, many, many years. My Rebbe taught us that some of them have changed and they're not reliable anymore. But the best of all, everybody felt, was the lettuce. That's got a very good reputation. Truthfully, many people also hold that the horseradish is the best. But some of the others are not well known to us anymore, and some of the names have changed. So it's very, very hard to tell. And those are the two main ones. But the Chesam Sofer and the Mishnah Brura thought that the lettuce was a very solid one. However, because of the matter of the insects, they said that, you know, if you have to, you should not use the lettuce unless it was properly checked for insects, and it'd be better to use the other ones, even though their tradition wasn't as strong. Again, another one here. Hamaskana hola miadvarim hi. What's the bottom line? Shezuchuchis megadelis enokli ezer relevanti. We don't need to have a magnifying glass, a loop, to be able to be sure that there are no bugs here. But behechlet yesh makom lebedika shel anashim hayodi ech veketzav lechapesa tolayim. But we do need professionally people who are trained. As I said many times, there are plenty of people, good meaning, well-meaning people. That's what we say. That's how everybody says it, right? Well-meaning people who never saw an insect in their lives, except maybe on the floor. But they never saw a bug on a lettuce. I have people all the time who don't know what a leaf miner is. It's pathetic. Some people stopped eating celery because they don't know what a leaf miner is. The simplest thing in the world to learn. You don't have to go to graduate school for that. It doesn't take any training. In not even 5 minutes, in 20 seconds, I could show you what a leaf miner is, and you could be sure that you'll know for the rest of your life. It's the simplest thing to figure out. So people stopped eating celery, and then there are people who told me that they're peeling celery, which I don't understand that at all, because it's not in the peel, it's under the skin, and these leaf miners, and it's not necessary to peel it, which I don't even know how you can do that, but whatever you do, it's not necessary. So basically, to give up these things, it's unnecessary. However, to go ahead and say that I'm checking my lettuce, I'm holding it up to the light, I don't see anything. You're not going to see anything unless you know what you're looking for. You weren't trained, you'll never see it. It could be right under your nose and you wouldn't see it. There are, I don't know if you've ever seen these things, but they have some little things in like a short piece here or there, and they sneak something in and say, did you see that? And you say, no, I didn't see that. Well, go look again. And when you look for the thing, then you find it. It's a very common problem that people have. And it's a shame that they don't realize that they're not trained. So that's the thing we are saying, is that, yes, we do need properly trained people. Al pi karon zeh, pu'ulos ma'abados hakashrus bedoreinu. What about all these people who are checking, they call themselves the laboratories, and they're checking these things? They don't need anything to make it bigger, or they don't have to look under a microscope. That's unnecessary. Those people who are making these professional, who are making these salads, and they're claiming that they're checked, etc. I'm not checked, actually, but they've gone through some kind of checking system. You're using people who are well trained. They don't need any special effects. They don't need any loops and things. That's not necessary. That gives you a little bit of an idea. Now, one more thing over here. There's a sefer that the relative of the Maharal, in a sefer called Damesek Eliezer, he writes, if they weren't able to see sometimes the bugs on the leaves, the leaves themselves. Zehu kasher ni'aru es ha'alim al gabe beged shachor shalav tzva'am haya bolet yoser. So what they did was they banged it, and they banged it onto a black background, and they were able to see it better. Or today, sometimes they use a white background, and they're able to see things better. B'sefer ben Avraham, it's told, she'ba'ofen zeh zihu negios shohoyes akayemes bepitrios. That's how they were able to discover in mushrooms. Now, if you know the bottom of a mushroom, especially some of the larger mushrooms, the nice mushrooms, they have like a black underneath. It's hard to see anything in there, but if you put it on a different background, you'll be able to see them. People can't, for example, see any bugs in figs. But if you smeared a fig on a white background, you'd see bugs there. And in almost every single fig that I know, there is a worm. You may not find it. I may not find it. But anyone who has been trained does find it. I have been trained, but not well enough to, I haven't done it any number of times. But if I saw them, and they're nice enough to see, they're nice, big enough to see, so I wouldn't have any problem doing it if I wanted to. But I gave up. Okay, next. So that's another example over here, putting it on a clear background. Sefer ben Avram, it's told the story. Okay, another thing here. Yes. But poiskim rabim husku zihui shel charakim al gidei bidikas alei yarak, keneged hashemesh or keneged haneir. So people did say, yes, check it by a good light. And the best light in general is sunlight. But not in the sun, the bright sun, but in the sunlight, not directly into the sun. And that light is very powerful. But if you're doing it from a door, from a window, where there's not much light at that point, so, really it's not helping very much. And you do really do have to either hold it up to the fluorescent or to an incandescent or looking in the sun, and then you see through the leaf, you see everything there, and it creates a very good background for you to see the insect. Now, the last part here. Hacharak shememenu hizhiru haposkim shuv v'shuv betzura harachavo biyoser hayoham milbin. His question he's going to deal with now, a very interesting one, is what about the fact that this is going to make us crazy? This is going to, it's making our life very difficult. It's very difficult. All these things, you're making it terrible. I can't eat this, I can't eat that, I have to check this, I have to buy special ones of that. Only this big, not that big. I mean, what are you pleased? They're making life tough. So this is what he dealt with. Ha'ima poskim asru kasher misbasheshes bechach shigeres hachayim hanormalit. But are you going to make, you're going to mess up the normal life cycle? You're going to make it difficult to live? So he says the biggest problem they had in history was the milbin. These were tiny, tiny insects that would flower. It was like rampant all over the place. Rabbeinu Yoina, it gives testimony, shecharak ze nimsa al gabe kol hakelim ubechol hamakamos. He says, it is everywhere, says the Rabbeinu Yoina. Rabbi Yoina. Gam a pri chodosh meid. The pri chodosh said, "Sheim mashirim ma'achalei galui mechbuchutz who alu lihismale betoloyim elu liaser." If you leave any food outside, open in the air, these bugs get attracted to it, and you have to ask for the food. Difficult to make a picnic, at least for in his world. The Sefer Yesod HaShavish VaHavoida tells a story. She'anshei Maisa hayu nohogim lahavir eish besoch hakelim lifnei shayu mishtamshim behem kedei limaneya mitoyloyim halalu. They used to burn out their utensils so that there wouldn't be any of these bugs because they were constantly being found all over the place. They'd burn them out before they used them to cook their food. And by the way, this is what's being done. I told you the story here that they're doing this up in New England, but actually not just New England. But anyway, there's a company that's making these. They're doing hydroponics, and the company, the Hashgacha, gives Hashgacha that the kelim that he used to make the hydroponics are 100% clean, and they make sure those are 100% clean before they start working. But then it's very easy to make kosher vegetables. Ubetzavaso lebanav, the Sefer Yesod HaShorish VaAvoda told his sons before his death, she'im kol hazihiros v'chashashos halalu hu b'chiber tefilim yuchedes kodem achilaso shalo yikashel b'charakim. He said, he told his sons, he said, I made a special prayer to say before I eat because of these insects.
He was special, unbelievable. Yeah. Alexander Ziskind.
Right.
Zichat Tzadik v'Kosher Livracha.
Right.
His book is unbelievable.
What?
Yeah. It's his books, yeah. It's unbelievable.
HaPri Chodesh Hoira Shekol HaMayim B'Yerushalayim Zekukim L'Sinun. The Pri Chodesh said that everybody has to filter their water in Yerushalayim. The Pa'as HaShulchan tells Shekach matza b'chol Eretz Yisrael. That not just Yerushalayim, the Pasa Shulchan says, the problem is all across Eretz Yisrael. Everybody has to strain their waters. And believe me, it's a lot easier to buy an easy filter than it is to strain water with some kind of shmata before you drink it. Rabim asru shtias mayim muchzakim kineguim v'lo samchu al asinun. And there were many people who didn't even rely on the filtering because they felt that since it's already got insects in it, maybe we're not going to get them all out. Nitan laharich shepos psak ze garam letzibur tircha v'ogmis nefesh. If you want to talk about difficulty, think about that one. Living with the water having to be with ossering the water if it has found with bugs in it, or having to strain the water constantly your whole life, and only all over Israel, please, I don't think what we're doing here in this world today even touches some of the difficulty. Plus the fact the whole lifestyle was very difficult. It was very, very, very hard life.
There's no piping,
right.
Nothing.
You just right, you go out to the well to get it. Harbe Yosei mi Adrisha lohosif kama shkolim kadei leknos yirakos mefukachim. It's certainly a lot harder to do what they were doing than for you to go out and buy something with a hashkacha on a bag, through four or five hashkachas, you know, guaranteed, bug-free, da-da-da-da, and to avoid some of these shilas. It isn't the hardest thing in the world. Anyway, that's a little bit I thought you'd enjoy. I personally like it. In the end, he gives a whole list of makaris. I don't have time to go through it now, but maybe some other time we'll go through some of them that we didn't even mention. He gives the actual sources of all these things that he mentioned. It's every sif that, you know, so this is not just a talk. We have the makaris here. The next topic today I want to take up, I think we'll do something a little lighter, and it's not light, but I mean, you know, something of a different nature. I think we'll move over to my friend Norman Balsamo, who wrote a nice piece for me, which I hope to use if I can, and that is, what's in your fridge? The number of obese children in the United States is growing by an alarming rate, with obesity now affecting one in every six children, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. As parents, we're responsible for how our young children eat. If a person fills their home with sugary snacks and drinks, their children are going to get used to them. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that unhealthy choices may cause a large array of food-related diseases such as diabetes and high cholesterol. But if your fridge is stocked with only good, clean foods, your children won't become addicted to the sugary snacks, and they'll make good food choices throughout their lives. It's not just about disease prevention, because by eating healthy, they may actually live longer and a more youthful and vibrant life. As parents, we're capable of programming our family's taste buds, because we do the shopping. We can stock up on high-priced snacks that are addictive in nature, or we can choose not to do so. It's in our hands. Habits start very early, both good ones and bad ones. We can train our children to practice restraint and not have a problem making healthy choices. Another benefit is that when a young person grows up with an understanding of moderation, they may be better prepared to handle other issues that come their way. Parents who give their children candy in moderation and aren't afraid to say no teach their children not to become dependent on quick fixes in their lives. For those not taught a moderation, snacking may well become an addiction. I think this piece already, even though I'm going to read the second part of it, I think it's a very powerful thing. And it's what we're saying is that food is a tool that the parent can use to teach the child moderation, to teach the child self-constraint, to teach the child good habits and independent thinking, and to be and not to always follow the pack, to be capable also of respecting his parents. And I heard a speech not so long ago from a very chashuv yid in Yerushalayim, who was a rebbe in Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Israel. His name is Rabbi Elefant, and one of the things that he mentioned about the power of a family is that they are given rules. I know it doesn't sound, you know, doesn't happen today, right? That they have rules. He tells a story about how he grew up in Borough Park, and his parents limited anything to Chalav Yisrael. It was not even in those days. It wasn't that much Chalav Yisrael around, but his parents couldn't care less Chalav Yisrael. And he was invited to birthday parties, a little boy, invited to birthday parties. And invariably at the birthday parties, they served pizza, right? I mean, Norman Balsamo wouldn't agree with that, but they served pizza. And the only one store in the whole of Borough Park had Chalav Yisrael pizza. That was on 18th Avenue. And so he, his mother used to call the parent up when they were having a birthday party and say, "Yeah, are you getting, where are you getting your pizza from?" So they'd say from wherever it was. They said, "Well, then, you know, okay, thank you very much." And he never sent, he didn't send a little boy. And he suffered. But he grew up, he said, knowing that his parents had standards. That's beautiful. Not everything is the way everybody else has. He has it. My friend has it. Why can't I? We have, this is our house. This is how we do it.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Sorry to, and all the research of kids, they found that the kids that has these borderlines, you know, the gates,
right,
are the most successful. Right. You know, they make, they create some kind of testing on kids.
Yeah.
And they put candies and they said, you don't touch these candies for 3 minutes. So the kids that they didn't touch it,
yeah,
they were the most successful than the other one that touched it before the time. And this is amazing to see that it's part of our life.
Right,
and you know, I spoke about it. You know, Shulchan Aruch is the initial of Shin Ayin.
Yeah,
and Shin Ayin also is Shlita Atzmit, self control.
Very good.
This is something that we are the Jewish have to be proud of it, to be that have the our self control on our life, and nothing else taking at us. You know,
right.
When you teach a kid that you have control on your body and your, you know, soul. This is the whole best.
Beautiful. Rabbi Miller used to say about, he used to describe this picture. He drew the whole picture in front of us about this little boy, 9, 10-year-old kid sitting around, and he'd love to have an ice cream, but he looks up at the clock and he sees it's not 6 hours yet. There's nobody in the house, and no one would know, but he can't. That's a Jewish kid. So if he can do it for kashrus, he could do it for this too. And but if he was trained, if he wasn't trained at all, then it gets very hard. You know, for him, a child can't fight everything. And maybe when he gets older, he'll have an idea. So here are some of the ideas that Norman gives us. Norman, by the way, is called Angels of Health. He's a very interesting gentleman, and we had, I know, for a while. Anyway, he said, fill your home with healthy food. So he gives you some ideas about what's healthy to bring in, etc. Now, he said, be prepared for some backlash from your children at the beginning. That's for sure. Because the child is not used to it. But you know something? You can develop tastes. You can make things taste good, and you can make things that will be comparable. You don't, it's not just taking, something that's tell me eat rice. No, we're talking about getting something that the child will enjoy. Fresh fruits and fresh fruits is for sure a wonderful snack and wonderful dessert. Look at the summer now. We have watermelon and mango and this and that and the other thing. And here, you're still giving him cake on a Shabbos table. What do you need it for? You know, you want to get some fruit? Get some fruit. You can make it colorful. You can make it attractive. And if you do, then that's what they'll shoot for. Think of it yourself. Let's say you have ice cream for dessert. I'd say ices. And, you know, they have flavors. So they have mango ices. And you have mangoes. Now, if you're going to serve the mango ices, you're giving them unbelievable sugar that's very different from the sugars that is in the mango. And it's overload, and they're never satisfied with it. And yet, if you teach them to enjoy the taste of the mango, which is basically the same taste, because it's just a little bit of extra sugar added in. So you've done a wonderful thing for your child. That's very simple. And then he talks about when he entertains. Norman is interesting, as I told you. So he talks about, you know, how people come to his house. Now, they're not expecting Norman Bellisamo to be able to be giving him all this health food. So he says, I'd like to offer guests two options. The less healthy food that they crave and expect, as well as some healthy Norman-approved options that he gives them. So this way he doesn't lose everybody at his Shabbos table or whenever he invites them over. But I think it's a very interesting point that Norman put out, and I believe that I hope to be publishing that one. We got a caller? No. Okay, there's no calls. If anybody wants to call, you can call 718-683-5858, 718-683-5858. And you could also text us at 347-927-8398, 347-927-8398.
Yes. Did you try to frozen grapes? Grapes. It's unbelievable, you know. You put it, freeze them, and everybody loved them.
Beautiful.
And, you know, beautiful. This even mango, you can freeze it, you know.
Right.
And let it eat it, you know. If sweet mango, you can put it on a stick, or you cut it to its squares, you know, small squares, and put it like a, you know, like a, the toothpick.
Yeah, sounds good. We're going to go on to another topic. Let me see what we have here. I mentioned a few of them already. Lost my Seder HaDvarim. So we'll get it back in a minute. One of the topics that I mentioned that we talk about it was camps. Now, this is a little bit unclear, you know, where... I'm not going to tell you how to do everything because, let's face it, your kids, if they're in camp, they're up there, and you really can't change anything. However, you can be mizares. Just like in yeshiva or in a camp, a parent, even though you're forced to send your kid to yeshiva, and you have to, you when you choose yeshiva or a camp, there's many parts of that decision that you're making. What you can afford, what the kid wants. There's a lot of issues. But one of them should be kosher. It should be that things are under proper hashgacha. Just like if you were going on yourself on a trip, you want to go to a nice hotel, 5-star. You know, let's say Chamesh Kochavim. You want a 5-star hotel. But you have to see that it's kosher. You have to see that your program is kosher. When you, we have 2 tours that I advertise in my magazine, one to Costa Rica and one to Africa for these. People are going on these tours. They got to know we have real kosher. Yes, they have real kosher. And you have to make sure that everything is up to snuff. So the same thing's got to be with camp. So I'm going to mention a few points, but I don't want you to think that you have to write down these things and get all nervous over right away. But there's things to think about. And usually, if you have a rapport with the owner of the camp or the organization that runs it, you can call and just find out. And usually, in today's world, there's an answer they have for you because they think about it also. But these are the things that need to be thought of. Are there written policies for the acceptable hashgachas they use at camp? In other words, are they just say, you know, get something with hashgacha? They must have some level. You might want to know that. You might want to get an idea if the kind of hashgachas that they're accepting. You want to find out somebody's in charge. You want somebody to be in charge of kashrus. It doesn't mean that they're sitting there 24/7, but somebody that is answerable to for kashrus. And you might want to find out if they have standards. They set up some kashrus standards. Maybe who helped them do it? Is there a rabbinical authority? A camp that has a rabbi doesn't necessarily mean that he's involved in kashrus at all. In most places, he's not. What about the vegetables? I mean, in your house, do you use vegetables that have been pre-checked, pre-washed, whatever it is, you know, that have a certain hashgachas? Are they doing that in that camp? You have 2 answers on that thing, and one is as simple. I mean, if you're talking about a teenager, you could, and if you have standards in the house, it might be able to be worked out in camp, even if the camp standards aren't exactly the same. Let's say vegetables is something that if you really are strong about your feelings in the house, then maybe you can say something to your son if he's a 15, 16-year-old boy. But when you're talking about a 10-year-old boy, you just have to, have made some kind of general decision beginning of the summer. you can't expect him to be independent. I wouldn't expect it. I would just say that it's your responsibility to make sure that there's some kind of standards that are going on there. There are a million things that could go wrong, but I don't want to go into them.
I just wanted
to bring up the idea of being aware of kosher standards in the camp where you were chosen to send your child.
I have a question to you. It's a general question, but the question like this. Do you, you know, many times I have a friend that has a restaurant and he under a certain kashrut, and people come to him and said, why are you not allowed to bring these vegetables? Or why are you allowed to bring that? Other kashrut agency is allowed it. What is he supposed to answer?
He can't veer from what his kashrut agency says. He can't go 1 inch this way or 1 inch that way. The kashrut agency does have a variety of standards. Believe it or not, not all the restaurants or the caterers are doing exactly the same thing. There are differences, and it might be worth your while to, when you have a shiloh about, you want to go to a fair or a restaurant, to pick up the phone and call and say, how is things being run in this restaurant? Because they're not always the same standard. But there is whatever variation there is, there's a limit to it. And you cannot have hashgacha from this agency if you don't want to follow their rules. There's just no way. Now, are they being oppressive to you? No. They're, just as we've talked before, they're basing it on their experience and they're studying the field. If they say, for example, right now, I'll tell you like this, that last summer, the whole thing about insects, if you remember it, was unbelievable going on here in Flatbush, Brooklyn. The restaurants were under tremendous stress. If you remember the ads, if you don't remember it, I'm not going to go into them, but the ads said, we had issues and we're trying to handle them. And that's, I'm not going to go into the details. Today, as we speak, a year later, most of the mashgichim have been specially trained by Rabbi David Goldstein. That's a fact. By Rabbi David, not by anybody else, by Rabbi David Goldstein. Most of the mashgichim that are working here in Flatbush have been trained by him. In those that were not trained by him, maybe they couldn't be, maybe they, you know, they didn't, whatever it is, that those establishments, the restaurateur or the caterer is told you can only use pre-checked vegetables that come in, with this and this hashgacha. We don't allow you to check it at all. The only people who can check, at least for most of these people, have been trained by either, if not by Rabbi Goldstein, then there were some people who were trained before by other people, but basically they're trained people that are doing it in all of the Flatbush stuff. That's over a year. It took a few months, let's say, to get that point. But now it's a different world. But last year it wasn't that way. Now, if this restaurant owner has been told by his hashgacha he can only use this and this and this, that's because that's the finding that they had. And that's after what we just mentioned was going on in the past. So I don't think that too many places left in Flatbush that are not handling things that way. There may be some, but in general, things are straightened out. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Let's mention one more thing before we go. This is interesting, that Rabbi Lau, Israel David Lau, in Eretz Israel, the chief rabbi, he's been working on reforms in the state-run kashrut system, which, if you're reading in the magazine, you've seen it, or you read in the papers, you've seen it. And now the problem is, what about the mashgichim? Because they wanted to have that the mashgichim should be paid by the rabbinate and not by the owners. And there's also a question of whether they're cutting out some mashgichim, because the new system they're trying to devise is going to allow, unfortunately, for less mashgichim. Just like in America, we have almost no mashgichim. In Flatbush and in Borough Park, there are almost no mashgichim in the restaurants. Almost no mashgichim. Yes, that is a fact. But even with the best hashgachas, almost no mashgichim in restaurants, very few in catering facilities. Why? Because they're relying on the owner. That's the fact, You could check it out yourself. I did it. Unfortunately, found out that's the truth. Now, what happened in Israel is they were afraid of losing their jobs. There are 6,000 mashgichim who are working for the rabbinate, and they don't know what their future will be. So what's happening is they decided to unionize. Already 1,500 signed up out of the 6,000 to unionize. I don't know what's going to happen in the end, but they do need protection. And, you know, if you change a system right under their noses, and those are the people who have been working for you for years, but it's going to be a crash unless something happens. A lot of very responsible people that maybe have worked for many, many years are going to be without a job. Now, they don't get paid so much, these mashgichim, but they have to find something else to do. Okay, maybe it's not the worst thing in that way, but you've been doing it for 10, 15, 20 years. It's very, very hard to go just become something else. And not everybody can be a teacher, and not everybody, you know, has an education in certain areas. And if you put in that time just to be let go, it's a, I don't know, it's a bitter situation. So anyway, that's a little bit what's going on in the kashrus world. I hope we were able to help you understand it. And as always, this is Rabbi Yosef Wickler, editor of Kashrus Magazine. And if you want to reach me during the week, you can do that at 718-336-8544 or at kashrus, K-A-S-H-R-U-S, at AOL.com. And you can look forward to some of these things appearing in my magazine. You know, I just got a call. I just got somebody today who asked me, very interesting. He works for the OU, and he gets the magazine, and he wants to know why he should get the Kashrus Monthly. Is it worth anything? Do I get everything in the magazine that I get in the Kashrus Monthly that comes out once a month? And I told him, in reality, you do get everything, but you get it so many months later. I mean, we put out a magazine in June, and then we're going to put out one in September, but the monthly of June, July, August, and even the beginning of September, there are people getting information much earlier, and it's a big shame not to know all that stuff. So, yes, there's a tremendous value in this kind of information. You can't get it all from listening to a show. You can't get it all from reading the paper because it's not complete. And, you know, you need to be reminded. So, and you have it all in one place. So if anybody like to, we want to get any of these products, the Kashrus Monthly or the Kashrus Magazine, give us a ring at 718-336-8544, Kashrus Magazine. Or you can send an email to Kashrus, K-A-S-H-R-U-S, at AOL.com. And until next week, this is your host, Rabbi Yosef Wickler, editor of Kashrus Magazine, wishing you a wonderful week.